My name is Frida Fairburn, and I'm interviewing Greg Zell. Greg, when were you in Nigeria?
From September of 62 through December of 64, which of course includes 3 months of training in New York City.
And your training number was?
Number 6.
Nigeria 6. Okay. Well, before you went into the Peace Corps, any idea what motivated you to try it?
Well, first of all, I was following John Kennedy's election campaign very carefully. I even volunteered around my college campus for him. And so I do remember when he announced that he would form a Peace Corps if he were elected. I didn't see live and in person the actual announcement, but I do remember it and remember all of the newspaper accounts and also subsequent television reporting of that event.
What kind of images did you have of what did you think that meant, Peace Corps?
Well, I thought it was a solution to the world's problems, quite frankly. Obviously, the problems would not go away quickly, but it was certainly a start.
And had you been thinking about the world's problems before that?
No, I was thinking about my own problems mostly. I was a senior in college, and I had to think about what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life. I was a pre-med student, and so I first applied to medical school. I only applied to one medical school because I thought it was the one that I had the best chance of getting into. And there was also a draft going on, even though the Vietnam War had not yet blossomed into what it ultimately became. There was a draft, and people were being drafted after college if they didn't have some sort of a position or job that would give their draft board a reason to defer them, not exempt them, not to use as a replacement for the draft, but as a deferment.
How are your parents on this idea? Did you kind of float it past them?
I floated nothing past them.
Ah.
I sprung it on them. And when their reaction was a little less than favorable, I explained to them that since I did not get into medical school, I had to find something to do with my life that would get a deferment. I said, the choice is the Peace Corps or the draft. This changed their thinking considerably.
Did you have any other friends who were interested in the Peace Corps at the time?
Not that I knew of, but I found out after I got accepted to the Peace Corps of two or three others that had also been accepted and did ultimately go into the Peace Corps. One to Nigeria.
Do you recall the process of getting accepted?
Yes. Basically, I think my memory is that I filled out a coupon, believe it or not, that was printed in the newspaper, and then received an application, which I filled out, and you had to give a lot of references and neighbor addresses. So the neighbors knew I was involved in this application process, but apparently there was not a lot of communication between the neighbors and my family about this, mainly because I used old neighbors from a previous neighborhood.
Area. Uh-huh.
And
did you take a test, a written test?
I don't think so, but I don't recall. I do know that the FBI went door to door checking on my references, and I thought that was heavy duty at the time.
Yeah, it was a little scary, wasn't it?
Yes.
But obviously, when did you find out? Where were you when you found out that you'd been accepted?
I was at home, and I've forgotten now how I found out.
Through the mail, or they called?
I don't recall.
Okay. All right, and were you absolutely excited? You said, this is what I want to do, or did you have some pause?
I was actually very excited. But, you see, I was supposed to go to the Ivory Coast, and I was a chemistry major, and I probably should have gone to class my last semester, and therefore I got a D in my major, and therefore I could not graduate without going to summer school to repeat the course. It was so much easier the second time around. And it was at that point that I was in rather regular contact with the Peace Corps recruiting people to postpone my departure for training from June to September. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I desperately wanted to go to French Africa. And at that point, I knew enough about geography. I knew that Nigeria was an English-speaking country. And that was the country that they offered me. And I kept bugging them for a French-speaking country.
You were fluent in French?
I was. So I asked them, you know, continuously for a French-speaking country, and they claimed they had no French-speaking projects on the calendar for the next 90 days. And I said, well, when does this Nigeria project go? They say, in 30 days. And I said, sign me up.
This was 62.
62, yes.
Okay.
And I knew enough geography to know that even though I could imagine how huge Nigeria is by looking at a map, I figured that if I was stationed in the dead center of the country, I would be very distant from a French-speaking part of Africa. But if I was near any of the borders of Nigeria, I would be very near a French-speaking part of Africa. So I was going to have my
cake and eat it,
yes.
And just skipping way far ahead while we're on this subject, did you then go to French-speaking Africa?
I certainly did, because I was stationed in Lagos, which is just 100 miles away from Dahomey, which is now called Benin.
Sure. And that was okay?
It was wonderful. The French food is wonderful. The same food we had in Nigeria, cooked French style. It was magnificent compared to what we had to put
French,
up with.
French wine and French bread. Yes, excellent. Okay. When, so you went into training September 62.
Yes. At Columbia University.
Columbia,
and a teacher's college.
All right.
Because we were all going to be teachers.
And you were living where at the time?
I was living in Miami.
So I flew up to New York,
which I had been to New York City before.
Okay. Oh.
But it was a real treat to go back there again. And I like telling people that we trained in the dead of winter at Teachers College in New York City because it's so similar to Nigeria.
Yes.
But that's not the real reason. None of us, we were all going to be teachers, and none of us had taught. So this was a crash course in becoming teachers.
Okay. All right. Let's pursue that line then. So what were you doing there to prepare yourself to teach?
Well, they gave us a few hours of, I guess, lectures on pedagogy of sorts, and then also we did have 2 weeks of practice teaching in the New York City school system.
You observed, and then you actually...
Yes.
You taught for 2 weeks, or you just taught?
Taught and observed for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh. And what kind of, in a science class?
My memory is that it was a science class, but it may not have been. I'm not sure.
So how was that?
It was fun, very interesting. We were all in different schools, some in the hoity-toity suburbs, and I was in the inner city, right next to what is now. It wasn't the inner city. It was a high school that had, as its student body, children who were bused in from the inner city parts of the tenements and high rises, housing projects and whatever of New York City. And the school was located right in back of what is now Lincoln Center. So it was actually a rather plush area today.
Yeah.
It wasn't so plush then, and the student body definitely wasn't
plush.
And an irony is that at the time one of the best selling books was called Up the Down Staircase, which described the a teacher in New York City. Mm-hmm. And during one of my practice teaching days, there was an announcement on the loudspeaker. Everyone on such and such a floor will go down the up staircase, or vice versa.
Right.
And I sort of commented to one of the students who was walking down the stairs with me, and they said, oh, there was a knifing in this stairwell last week. I go, oh!
Oh, maybe there's a reason, yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. I don't know.
So that experience wasn't so bad?
No, it wasn't bad at all. It was very positive.
Oh,
and one of the things is that didn't make sense to me at the time, but it certainly does in retrospect, is that one of the trainees in my group was also at my school, and he was an African American, and they wanted one of us to say a few words about the Peace Corps to the mm-hmm. student body, and since the student body was largely African American, they asked him to say it, and they apologized to me, saying that these kids really wouldn't understand where you're coming from as
really?
Much as they would understand from where he's coming from. And I didn't fully appreciate that at the time, because even though I had grown up in the largely segregated South,
mm-hmm.
and of course, that's ancient history too.
Okay. So, all right, what else was going on at training? You may have been concentrating on teacher training, but there's some other stuff going on.
Oh, certainly. We had language training, and since this is an English-speaking country, our language training was for, I call for socializing only.
Uh-huh.
We weren't going to be using it in our everyday classrooms, but
uh-huh.
we needed it to appreciate the culture and to get to know people better.
Uh-huh.
And we were told that our entire training group was going to be stationed in the far north of the country, in the remotest regions of the country. So the only language we were taught was Hausa. And about 2 weeks before the end of the project,
mm-hmm.
it was announced that the project had been changed, that we were going to be stationed throughout the country, and that a handful of us would be stationed in Lagos. And of course, no one wanted to be stationed in Lagos. Everyone wanted to go to the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, there were about 60 of us in training. A handful would be about 10%. That's six. Not a chance that I would be one of the six that would be stationed in Lagos. And so we were given our assignments, and I got Lagos. And even though Abadan was a city that was far bigger than Lagos
mm-hmm.
at the time, people who were going to Abadan, they were elated to go to Abadan. But no one wanted to go to Lagos. And I felt that when we were talking about our site assignments
mm-hmm.
amongst ourselves, I felt that my friends were sort of saying, yeah, 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 we're going to the bush, you're going to Lagos. None of them actually said it.
Uh-huh.
Those were not the actual words, but I just felt it, you know. And so I was a little down and
What you felt that theirs was the greater, more noble situation, and you were...
They're going to suffer.
Oh.
They're going to suffer gallantly.
Whoa. Okay.
And so the nub of the story is that Lagos was one of the most fascinating assignments I think
mm-hmm.
anyone could ever have. It's a fascinating city then. I'm sure it's a hell on wheels now, but it was sure a very difficult city.
Yeah.
Then, and I visited my friends in the bush quite often, and I missed nothing. They had a boring existence. Lagos was never, never, never boring.
Certainly never quiet either, as I recall.
I lived mostly in the suburbs,
oh.
and the suburbs were
oh.
not bad.
Well, that's good. Okay, you said there were 60 people in your group.
Yes.
Do you recall how many actually got to Nigeria?
It was very close to 55, 50.
Oh, really? You had few people
deselected?
Deselected,
yes.
Uh-huh.
I don't recall anyone actually quitting,
mm-hmm.
but there were several deselections, and we always speculated as to whether they were for psychological reasons,
mm-hmm.
but with the little bit of probing we were able to do, it seemed like most of them had to do with CIA connections, that someone in the family worked
uh-huh.
for the CIA, and of course this is a taboo relationship between the Peace Corps and the CIA. And Kennedy made this very clear from the beginning, Sergeant Shriver and Kennedy, and so it was easy to get deselected if you had a connection.
Do you remember much contact with the psychologists who were hanging around?
Yeah.
They had a little chat with everyone.
Oh, everybody, and the tests that were endless, it seemed. They may not have been endless exactly, but they because they did obviously end, mm-hmm. but you know. They were almost repetitive, and we often made a joke out of things, asking if shall I touch the doorknob for you so that you don't have to, so you're afraid of the doorknob.
It has the rubber band
around your head. Yes, of course. Yes.
A Minnesota multi-phase
personality
test.
Yes.
Right. Did you have sensitivity training? Do you remember that? Where you sat around and chatted?
No, I don't remember that at all.
Something they tried on our group. It didn't work very well, so you didn't miss anything.
Okay.
Okay.
We did have health,
Good.
Extensive health mm-hmm. Discussions and things of that sort, which were very helpful, I thought.
Well, yeah. Sanitation and what to avoid and some of those nasty things.
Yeah.
Yes. How about American government and politics? Did you get some of that?
I don't recall much of that.
How about Nigerian history?
Some of that, yes.
Culture?
Particularly the rather recent political developments leading to independence.
Uh-huh. Which occurred in 1960.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 1960.
Okay. Right. Okay. Any high points during training? Was there anything that was particularly effective as far as you're concerned?
No, but I can't think of any high points except... I remember the staff of training arranged for Nigerians to cook us a Nigerian meal.
Ah.
So that was exciting.
So you had Nigerians on your staff. They were language people?
No, the language person was, I believe, an Englishman, and he was not even a language expert. He was an anthropologist who was interested in the anthropology of languages, and therefore he accepted this assignment to teach us a language he knew nothing of. He studied it for weeks before and the day before for his lessons, and he invented his own alphabetization of Hausa, which was wonderful because if you went to northern Nigeria and were proficient enough in Hausa, you probably would not be able to read the Hausa newspapers in northern Nigeria because he used a different system of transliteration. He used his own phonetic system.
Wow. But you had no native speaker, so you never heard anybody speak
the
language?
No, once in a while. Uh-huh. Once in a while.
But then when you were shifted, did you get any Yoruba training at all?
No.
Oh.
But Peace Corps did allow those of us who were stationed in Lagos to have private Yoruba lessons.
Oh, you had tutors.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's good. Okay. All right. Your fellow trainees, did you bond with them? Was it a particularly close group?
I think the dynamics were interesting because it's sort of typical of a group. You bond with 5, 6, 7, and you're almost oblivious that the other, when you're dealing with that number, almost oblivious to the others.
Once you got to Nigeria and went off into your various assignments, did you ever see the rest of your group again?
Essentially, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
They
yes,
bring
I know.
The groups back together.
I know they do.
It's a very effective part.
Yes.
Way to keep people going.
Yes.
Keep them involved. Okay. All right. There we are in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And you found out back in the States that you were going to Lagos.
Yes.
Okay. And then you arrived in Lagos and you went off to your assignment. How did that work the
first
day?
Well, two things. I will say that. The friend of mine who went into the Peace Corps at the same, from college, who went into the Peace Corps when I should have originally gone in, met me at the airport with the Peace Corps staff. So it was fun. It was kind of nice to see a familiar face at the airport. It took a couple of weeks that I was in country, sort of moseying around, staying at the Peace Corps guest house, Peace Corps hostel, before I actually got my school assignment because supposedly my housing wasn't ready and I don't think that the all the details of the assignment were worked out when I got there.
Were the schools already in session? Did you aware
no,
of this?
No,
oh,
no.
So it was a spring, it was a break time for them.
It was a break time, yes.
Oh, that's good.
And so my first day at school, the principal, it was a what they call a modern school or a junior high school for girls.
Oh.
And it was owned by a woman whose reputation was as girlfriend to the Prime Minister of Tofawa Balewa. And she was a very famous woman because Tofawa Balewa had four wives who were in Perda in northern Nigeria.
Yes, right up the road from me.
Oh, and so he needed a hostess when he was in Parliament.
Okay.
And so she was an ideal hostess because she told me that her father was the first Nigerian Anglican bishop, and her husband, whom she divorced, was the first Nigerian physician fully trained in a British hospital and university.
Wow.
So she was divorced from him and a very powerful woman, and to spite her husband after the divorce, she rented their marital house to the Russians, and it was the Russian embassy in Lagos. See, it's, I'm telling you, Lagos was exciting, you see.
Yeah.
You know?
Never a dull moment.
And we had the greatest seats in Parliament when it was in session, believe me.
Well, so this was a privately
private school, yes.
And you had a teaching assignment?
Yes,
my goodness.
It only covered two grades, seventh, what we would call seventh and eighth grade. It was a junior high school, or a modern school, they called it then. And the first day of school, the principal introduced me, and at morning assembly, which is under the trees, because we don't have any assembly halls, and he asked all of the seventh grade girls to line up according to height, with the tallest girls in the front and the shortest girls in the back. And he explained to them and to me that Mr. Zell has never taught before, and so we want to make sure he has the best students for his class. And so he says, okay, the first 30 girls, the first 30 tall girls, go with Mrs. So-and-so. And he leans over to me and says, those are the toughest girls in the school. She is a Nigerian. She knows how to handle tough girls. She says, okay, the next 30 girls go with Mrs. So-and-so. He says, that's Mrs. Johnson. Her husband is here on a USAID assignment. She has taught for 25 years in the Washington, D.C. school system. She can handle those girls. Okay, now the 30 shortest girls go with Mr. Zell, and you'll be in his homeroom. And of course, at the end of term, my homeroom was the easiest, the best, so-and-so. Why? Because there are no birth certificates. No one knows how old they are. And if you are tall,
you're older,
and you're in this private school because your parents were willing to pay the school fees. So if you don't want to be in that school, it's because you're too old, too uneducated, too illiterate, and you tend to act up and create a little mischief. My girls had, they were so quiet.
Docile.
Exactly. And they oftentimes did not do very well in school because they had a very bad background in English. And so at the end of the term, when the teachers reviewed all the students, they would say, oh, she's so small, she's so young, let her repeat the school term. And so if you were small and quiet, you could be in school for a long, long, long time.
with your parents' paying.
Exactly.
So you were actually teaching as much English as you were science?
Always.
Yeah, because these kids had to catch
up.
But you had no idea how old they were.
No.
Okay. So, but you enjoyed the teaching part?
I did.
Did you have decent texts?
They were British-style texts, and they were very, very, very elementary, and I thought not terribly good. But
did you have a curriculum? Were you aiming at any particular
there was a
standard?
There was a curriculum, and I also knew right from the beginning I wasn't going to meet the standard, which is not part of my personality, because I am a
goal
doer
achiever. Yeah.
And a goal achiever, and it was obvious that their English was so poor that I could not overcome this, but I would do the best I could. I subsequently was transferred to another school. And
after a full year?
No, after 2 terms.
Oh, 2 terms, okay.
And I was transferred to a Muslim girls' high school on the other side of town. And by now I was a seasoned teacher. I had taught for 2 terms.
Right. Why were you transferred?
I got into a little bit of difficulty with the Peace Corps. and my principal, I told you, was a very powerful woman. And her brother, who was a little old man, he was technically the person in charge of this school. She sort of was the overseer, where he sort of ran the day-to-day operations. And he said that, he called me into his office one day and said that I was not doing my class register, where you take attendance in the morning and the afternoon, correctly. And I'd only been doing it this way for 9 months. He says, here's 2 new registers. Redo all of your attendance for all these months. And I explained to him very nicely and very gentlemanly that my register worked. No one told me to do it that way. You can find the same information from my register. I said, I don't mind transferring the information, but I'm only going to be in your country for 2 years. He took this to be insulting and insolent, and he reported me to his sister, who reported me to the Peace Corps, and the Peace Corps on an emergency basis removed me from the school.
And so he had some other issue, and
that was the issue.
The register.
Yes.
I see.
And my talking back to him.
You
see,
okay.
I disrespected him, as we would say today. And he was an old man, and I was a young punk. I mean, I was, you know, there was a good 60 years difference in our ages.
Okay.
And I didn't really mean to be disrespectful. And I didn't think I was. I thought I was talking to him adult to adult, man to man. It doesn't work that way when they don't want it to.
So were you able to leave them on a friendlier basis?
Or no. It was fast.
You were out.
I was removed. And the Peace Corps person in the Lagos office, who was in charge of Lagos volunteers, he helped move me out of my house on a Saturday at noon, in the dead of heat. And of course, Peace Corps volunteers in the city had to live upstairs, so there's no elevator, so we were trucking things up and down the stairs, and this man was pooped at the end of getting me out of my house, and his comment to me was, you can rest assured that the next school that you are sent to will not be owned by the girlfriend of the Prime Minister.
Good point.
Yes.
I hope the Peace Corps learned that lesson. So the house you were in was on the compound?
No, it was in the city. Strangely.
Rented or something?
Well, strangely enough, it was owned by my principal.
I see.
And she rented it to the Peace Corps. She rented it to the school, who got a stipend from the Ministry of Education for Peace Corps volunteers.
I see. So then when you were moved to the other school, was that on you were on the compound?
No.
You were.
The school was in a suburb called Apapa. And my house was in Surulere, which is on the other side of the city. And so Peace Corps said to the school, you've got 1 Peace Corps volunteer, now you want another Peace Corps volunteer, you're going to have 2 Peace Corps volunteers, and you've got to provide them with transportation across town from Surulere to the school. So the school said, oh, that's easy. We'll buy them a car.
I see, and you were, of course, we're not allowed to have that car.
Oh, no. It was an agreement between Peace Corps and the school. So we got a brand new Opel Kadett station wagon.
Good grief.
And the interesting thing is that the other volunteer at my school, we had to pick up teachers on the way to school, because we had a long distance to go, so there were teachers who lived along the way.
So, what, an hour commute in the morning and the evening? Or
it was probably 40 minutes,
oh my goodness.
45 maybe.
Through Lagos traffic?
Yes.
Oh, good.
And so The interesting thing, though, is that she was a she, and I'm not, mm-hmm. and she had a boyfriend who had a car. So she never needed a car.
So you had a...
Our car was guess whose.
Wow, now that was a... That's interesting because, of course, throughout the country, at least when I was there, no cars. Don't even drive cars of other people, and if you were doing it, don't let us know, kind of thing. But
and at some point in time, if not in Nigeria, in certain countries, it's absolutely forbidden that you drive any four-wheeled vehicle. Forbidden. And if you're found out...
It's a safety hazard.
It's
some places
out in some countries.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. I have no idea how long this is going. Oh, well.
Okay. Okay. For 2 years, so you switched your job after two
yes.
terms, and you remained the remainder of the time
yes.
at the second school. Better situation?
It was much better. It was still chaotic, but at least since I was a seasoned teacher, I laid down the law. Mm-hmm. In my science class, which I knew they weren't going to pass, you will have to do all of your science work in perfect English. Mm-hmm. Perfect isn't...
So what was it, biology? Or
it was general science,
oh,
essentially.
Okay.
Essentially. General science. You have to do it in perfect English. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Nigerian teachers on the staff, they laughed. Mr. Zell, you're going to kill yourself trying to teach two subjects at the same time.
Huh?
You know you're not the English teacher. They were ribbing me, but they were also like,